Start. There we go. Welcome to Create Your Bliss with Nika Annan. Today we have the wonderful opportunity to talk to Isak Beery. Isak is the author of two books, one of which is The Gift of Shamanism, which is a beautiful book about the visionary power, ayahuasca dreams, and journeys to other realms. He also has a new book, Shamanistic Transformations, True Stories of the Moment of Awakening, based on conversations he had with significant shamanistic practitioners. And how does one receive the call to enter into the shamanistic path? Isak Beery is an internationally recognized shamanic healer and teacher. He was initiated into the circle of the 24 Yachaks by his Quechua teacher in Ecuador and by Amazonian Kanamari Paka. He has also trained intensively with other elders from South and North America. The founder of shamanportal.org and co-founder of the New York Shamanic Circle, he is on the faculty of the New York Open Center. The author of The Gift of Shamanism, he lives in New York, which is a wonderfully interesting place to be a shaman. So maybe we could start there. How does one be a shaman in New York?
Well, first of all, I'm really happy to be with you.
Thank you.
Well, you know, it is a challenge to practice shamanism in New York because New York is the largest, most active capitalist city in the world. but like another shaman from Ecuador was saying that when I asked him, when I told him that, well, you know, for you, sorry, for you, it's easy to practice shamanism in Ecuador because everything is nature and you are so connected to nature. But for us in New York, you know, it's so hard. There's no nature. And he basically said to me with something that really kind of shocked me, of course, that everything has spirit. And in New York, the sidewalks have spirit, the building have spirit, the car have spirit. And all we have to do is to connect with them. Because in shamanism, we believe that everything in the in the universe is alive and is vibrating with energy. And energy is consciousness. So you can live wherever you are and connect to the spirit of the place, the spirit of nature, and receive information from spirit.
Well, and it seems like the spirit of New York is a very energetic and probably powerful spirit. That's quite a lot of dynamism to have within your boundaries, if you know, if cities and those and places have a spirit.
Yeah.
It must be quite
Well, everything has spirit in shamanic tradition. And we can use our intention, our mind, the vibrations of our mind, to connect with the vibrations of everything that is around us.
Mm-hmm.
They all have something to teach us.
That is very, very true. So what took you onto this path? Did you grow up in a shamanistic culture?
Well, I was born in Kibbutz Beit Alpha in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And this kibbutz was established in 1922 by young people who came from Russia and Poland who rebel against their religious people, their religious families. And they vowed not to practice any religion or any spirituality. They wanted to work the land, to be farmers, and not to continue the old tradition of the Jewish religion. So they were very against it. And but on the other hand, because we were celebrating and very in tune with nature, we celebrated all the Jewish holidays and other holidays, basically celebrating nature, the change of season, the bringing of the fruits or the vegetables, the rain. So in many ways, because we were not so concerned with the religious aspect of it, we we actually practice what we call shamanism in many ways. And we lived in, it was a very remote place on the mountain. So all nature really spoke to me from very, very early age. I didn't put it in the context of shamanism. Mm-hmm. I was just absorbing nature or talking to nature from very early age. So that was really my, in many ways, my initiation to the shamanic tradition, although I never really knew it. And it took me a very long time, almost to the end of my 30s, to make that connection. I was living at that time in New York, and I had already a few careers before. I was a fine artist. Mm-hmm. I showed in galleries, and I was in all over the world. Then I became an advertising person to support my family, and I had a pretty good career creating very creative advertising. But there was something that was missing in my life, and I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And I think that the connection to nature was missing to me, and I read a book by Hank Russellman, Spirit Walker, that really shook me and gave me many answers that I was looking for. And reading this book, he was describing a workshop he took with a guy named Michael Harner, who created the core shamanism, that is very popular now. He's like the father of the new shamanism, mm-hmm. neo shamanism. And I was amazed by my ability to journey into the other world and bring information that were relevant to the people that I journey with or journey for. That really was the beginning of it, and I really wanted to know more. I wanted to understand how that happened, that I could be lying next to someone and do a journey for her, and I could see her life. I could see what's wrong with her, what her mission in life is. And so I took I took more workshops in that to expand my knowledge, and then I went to a trip to Ecuador, and there I met the person that would be my teacher, and I became his apprentice a year and a half later on another trip that I took there. So it wasn't a journey that I planned to have. it really became. I follow the circumstances that or the event that led me to where I am now. But there really was no plan for me to become a shamanic practitioner. It really happened. It's actually now that I look at it, it really came from spirit.
Yes. I was going to ask you if it was a calling that you learned to heed, maybe is what I'm trying to ask you.
Well, it is a call. As I see it now, I do think that is a call that came from spirit for me to follow. It's not necessarily that I had to follow, but I really felt that one thing led to the other, and there was no coincidence in life. And I'm glad that I listened to my inner voice, and I went and followed that. Mm-hmm. That's really why the reason I wrote this book, The Gift of Shamanism, because I wanted people to see how hitting the call of spirit really is so important to all of us. So in this book, I'm telling my personal story, but many people have stories very similar like mine, and many people don't listen to the stories because of other obligations or misconceptions, and it is important to follow them.
And how do you help people now? I understand you have a practice now working with people. How do you help people acknowledge that call?
That's a very good question. People that come to me, they already feel that there is something that is not clear in their life. They want to find answer. They want to find what their life purpose. Why are they having those experiences? So they come for shamanic healing or to my shamanic workshops to clarify this for them. And what I try to do is to find what their life purpose on this earth. Why are they here? What makes them so uniquely them? And when they find that that answer, they have a more a courage to go and follow their path. And I'm really there to support them, to midwife them into their life purpose, into their life work. And we do that in you know, through the regular shamanic tools, if you call it this way, working with power animals and spirit guides. Mm-hmm. We work through soul retrieval. We work with understanding their dreams. We work with doing ceremonies and rituals to connect them to nature and to the four elements so they can feel part of nature, not disconnected. And slowly they find their own way. But I really look at it more as a midwifing of people into their path, into their shamanic path.
That's a beautiful way of phrasing it.
Yeah. And many people that I have worked with started their own shamanic practice. They teach themselves, other groups, and they spreading that message. The message of the shamanic work is that we are all shamans, that we are all have the abilities to connect to spirit. We are all have the ability to heal, even if we don't see this way or we don't even notice it. By talking to people, by listening, deeply listening to people, by touching, by hugging, by kissing, by that's healing already.
Yes.
So I help them to understand that and to own it and to go out into the world without shame that something is wrong with them, like our society teaches children. And to embrace that and to be, I mean, to come out of the closet, if you want, to own that power that give them their own power.
And it sounds like that there is a sense of community that comes from that.
Well, community is very important in the shamanic work. I mean, the shamanic work is a community work. That community, especially in New York and other cities in the world, is the most important ingredient that people are missing in their life. Community is a supporting aspect of each one of us. And the shamanic work, the shaman himself, in the definition of a shaman, according to the Tungus shaman that I worked with, is the keeper of the fire. Mm-hmm. And the keeper of the fire, the role of that is to keep that little soul of the community intact, and to tell the stories, the traditions, to help in the wellness of the community. It's not about just one person, it's about the whole community. And shaman really needs community to for his work, and community needs a shaman to help them put it all together in many ways. So the shamanic tradition, the community is the witness of other people's, of the individual healing. It says that when you do a healing for one person and you have witnesses around that, they help usher the well-being of the person. They are witnessing to his struggle and to the acceptance of the role that he takes.
And then can continue to support the person after the transformation.
Oh, absolutely. Because we all need support. The healing by itself for one person is not enough. We need the community support, the memory of that to continue to vibrate in his life.
And to become perhaps like a dominant chord or some tune or something.
Well, whatever the person needs, but it's always easier for a person to take the courage, the steps for healing, when he have a supporting community behind him. It could be friends, it could be family, it could be other people who are committed to his personal growth. But it needs to have that aspect of community, supporting community, to help the person to take the steps to heal himself.
Yeah, and I think it's a very big challenge for Westerners, I think, to ask for that help and to ask a community to show up and support us, I think is...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, many people come to me here because they are lonely. They don't have people to talk to from heart to heart. They don't have anybody to share their woes and aches and pains emotionally and physically. We need that in shamanic community, the villages or other small communities. We all have this support system around us. It's not like that in big cities.
No. Even if you have like-minded people, it's takes intentionality to connect with them.
Yes. And that's why it's so important to have a support group, shamanic support group, or shamanic circles, shamanic gathering, to have people supporting you on this path, you know, because once people are exposed to spirit and they start talking to spirit, they receive so much knowledge and insights, profound insights. And it's very rare that you can go to your hairdresser or to the person in the supermarket and tell him that your jaguar told you to go and do certain things, you know, because they will put you in a small little room.
Without a door.
Without a door. So... I always say to people who do this workshop that it's wonderful. Now you have a power animal and you can connect to these spirit guides anytime you want, but you also are now officially crazy. So you need people to support you on this journey.
Yes, it needs to be a shared reality.
Yes, and supporting reality and supporting community that to support you through it. Because sometimes your insights are not pleasant; they're not something that you can write home to somebody about it. It's a great healing. You meet your traumas, your fear, your shadows. Mm-hmm. You meet places in your life that you were trying to avoid. So you need people to help you sort it out and to be a supporting you, cast for you.
And that, yeah, that brings one to a very different life, a whole different experience of life.
I believe so. I think that it enrich a person's life because it opens their sensibility to the greater reality. Like many people that come to sessions, they say that when they leave the sessions, they go outside and they see the world with sharper colors. Their intuition increase, their sensibility, they feel the wind, they feel the air, everything is more alive. And it's not much what I've done, it's they are open, all their sensibility, it opens up. And it's a great feeling to be so well connected to the elements and to nature around you, to the building around you, to whatever is surrounding you. You don't feel so separate and disconnected.
No, that's very true. I lived in New York for a while, and I always felt very grounded in New York. I felt very connected to the granite that holds up the city. It's so present. It's very,
yes, not too many people actually know about the granite. But this is a very strong magnetic field in under Manhattan that keeps the buzz, the energy going, and many sensitive people do feel that. But a lot of people don't even notice it. And I think that the work with shamanic tools opens up this sensitivity to people, and they feel more connected to their surrounding. And I think that this is a great responsibility also to feel more responsible for the environment that you are in.
Yes. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about that? About our role.
Well, the shamanic work is about connecting you to everything is around you. Like we said, that everything around us is vibrating with energy. Energy is life. Energy is consciousness. And so when you are aware of that and you start to live in those worlds, in the seen world, in the reality world, and in the unseen world, you automatically will feel more responsibility to the well-being and this of your environment that is around you, because everything speaks to you. So you can touch a tree and ask him how he's doing. There's any message for you. You can touch a building and feel that energy speaking to you. So you take more responsibility. And that's really what we want at the end. The shamanic work teaches you to be responsible for the action and the thought that you are having, and to know that everything that you do have an impact somewhere in this world on the well-being of the world. And that's a great responsibility, and it's also great joy to know that you can influence other people's emotions and well-being.
It is. It's quite astonishing. And mm-hmm. It's it makes a huge difference just to be. When I lived in New York, I remember there was the bus driver on the 86th Street crosstown bus used to smile and say good morning to everybody. And that bus immediately became a community. People spoke to one another, people were friendly, they helped each other on and off the bus.
Yes.
It was a beautiful experience. I remember it so clearly.
He was a shaman.
He was. He was a beautiful and a healer, because people who could barely walk when they got on could walk much better when they got off because there was this positive energy of connection and
Yes.
care. It's very beautiful.
And that's what we want. We want people to connect to each other, to feel their life. We are all one. We are all the same. We are all connected. The separation is a dream that our logical Western society created. It's not something that human being lived all their millions of years here on this earth. It's something pretty new, this isolation and separation from nature and the surrounding. So there is a deep yearning for people to connect to other people, to nature and the environment. And that yearning is why shamanism today is so popular and gained grounds in mainstream, because everybody wants to feel this way. They want to feel connected to the spirit world, to the world around them. And it gives them sense of aliveness and power.
Yes. And yes, and that being alive is a gift and a powerful gift.
Absolutely. I mean, nobody wants to be dead. They want to be alive. They want to feel like they mean something to someone.
So I'll go back to the burgeoning shamanism in the world right now, but I wanted to ask you about in neo-shamanism, children in neo-shamanism, because my sense of children is that they have to be taught not to honor all those things, that they know that the trees and the buildings and their teddy bears and everything speaks.
Well, naturally, children, when they are born, they learn through experience, and which is what shamanism is. It's learning by experiencing, not through your logic, but through the experience of the tactical experience through all our senses. One of the senses is the intuitions, the sixth sense. And as they grow older, all that excitement and the sense of discovery and the sense of wonder of discovering the world is replaced by tests and academic achievements. And people and parents are telling them not to be so children-like, to be adult, to be responsible, to do their homework. And so slowly, slowly, they give up that part of themselves that wants to explore the world on their own. And they start to trust what's written in books and what told them in church and in the synagogues and on the news. They don't trust what they experience themselves. And I think that that's part of the nightmare that we live here, actually, because the gift of shamanism is the gift of experiencing yourself, the wonder, the magical world. And through that, you shape your life experience. You can't shape your life experience through reading another book that give you logic. It's a direct experience. That's why I actually wrote in my book the Gift of Shamanism. I wrote it mostly as storytelling because I wanted to connect to people through my own stories, but people do remember more through other people's stories. They learn because of the emotional connection to the narrative. They can't really remember so many details, and the details are not important. What's important is the story, what you learn from the story and your emotional connection. So I think that what we're missing in our society is a little bit more of the magic, more of the wonder. The big mystery is missing.
Mm-hmm.
And the work with shamanism allow people to go back and reconnect to those experiences that they had in their childhood and legitimize it, validate it, give it room when they grow up and they become adult, or and they can reconnect with that sense of wonder.
And I've said, and as your book is titled, it is such a gift. It is such a gift to have the sense of awe about the miraculousness of everything around us.
Yes. Yeah. Imagine that everybody that listened to our show and everybody around us will walk with that sense of awe. With this, that sense of, that is magical. That is magical. I can't believe that. This is so beautiful. So every person that you meet on the street, every person that you get in touch with, is part of that magic. It's not a stranger. He's a teacher. He's a person that came to show you the mystical manifestation of the world. Isn't that will be such a beautiful world?
That would be amazing. And for us to live to live from that place.
Yes.
To see and be seen as that. How different that would make every day. And I think that that's one of the great gifts of shamanism is the dailiness.
Yeah. Well, you know, we do a lot of rituals and ceremonies during our daily activities, and we really don't really pay much of attention to them. I think that we really need to pay more attention to it, that when we brush our teeth or when we eat breakfast in the same place at the same time, when we have it is a ritual and ceremony. Mm-hmm. You have to put it in perspective and have intention that this ceremony will be a wonderful experience. Not just brushing the teeth and spitting the water. It is a ceremony.
That's a great way to look at it. And what a great way to teach children to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So everything becomes a ceremony. Doing homework is a ceremony. Everything is a ceremony. Eating is a ceremony. It's a ceremony of blessing, of abundance.
And often of community. Yeah, no, that's really beautiful. And you were talking about how the neo-shamanism, and I'm really fascinated by the creative impulse now in shamanism, because there's very traditional shamanic paths and there's so many new ones of people exploring and coming to this in the reality of the world we live in now. So to not just tie it to tradition, which is very important and very beautiful, but also that we are creating ceremonies and speaking to different spirits, because there's different beings around now. All of the electronic entities that we have created.
Uh-huh.
You know, that we've created cars and planes. And so how do you see that whole flowering, maybe expansion? I mean, I don't know how you would, what you would call it.
Well, I think there are two elements here. One of them is our need to go back and meet those indigenous cultures and indigenous people who carried those shamanic traditions from thousands and thousands of years, and they decided to share it with us now in this new age that started not long ago. Mm-hmm. The new Pachacuti that came in their prophecies to share the knowledge with the Western world, because those traditions are steeped in knowledge that worked for thousands of years. So I think that it's important to have indigenous culture roots and bring them into our Western society. That said, there are many people who are now, it's called the new neo-shamanism, who are learning to journey into the spirit world and work with a drum and they, in many ways, because the lack of their the root of shamanism, the indigenous root of shamanism, make up some new systems or new ideas. So I'm with two minds about that, because I do believe that we need to acknowledge our ancestors. Mm-hmm. And celebrate their beautiful knowledge that they kept for so many years. But on the other hand, we need to adapt it to our current life and to make it more relevant to our own life. So, but I think that it needs to be done in such a honoring way, a responsible way, and not to make something that is not shamanic in nature and call it shamanic. Mm-hmm. For instance, in most of the shamanic tradition that I know of, that I know of, they don't use the word chakras. Mm-hmm. But in our neo-shamanism, people are using the chakra as it was invented by shamans. It's not. Why not say that it's not shamanic tradition, and we're incorporating the chakra system into the shamanic knowledge? Do you see what I'm saying, or what I'm trying to say?
Yes, as we borrow from different threads and different learnings, not to muddle it up, but to be clear and to honor the source of each tradition.
Yes, exactly right. And not only that, but there are so many different shamanic practices, like shamanic Reiki and shamanic yoga and shamanic all kind of different things. People attach the word shamanic to so many different practices that are not necessarily shamanic. I think that it's also very important not to dilute the meaning of the shamanic work by using it in practices and that are not necessarily shamanic. And I'm not saying that yoga is not, it's a great practice. I practice that. Reiki is a great practice. That's fine. Breathing is great breathing. So, but by attaching it to the shamanic work, there is a little bit of a danger of putting everything under one label.
Yeah, and I'm never clear when people say this is shamanistic yoga, what they're trying to say. Seems like you know, and
That you're right, because we don't know what they want to say. There are beautiful yoga-like or qigong-like practices that are indigenous-based.
Mm-hmm.
Why not use those practices and spread that work in the West? Instead of taking a practice that is practiced in China or Japan and give it a new name. I mean, everything has a tradition attached to it, or it comes from a tradition. We should honor it.
Yes, and be respectful.
Yes.
Because that in itself is a part of shamanism, that you respect things for what they are, so you don't ask a tree to be a river.
You know what? Absolutely. You're absolutely right. You can't ask a river to be a tree. But you can honor the river.
Mm-hmm. And the tree. And talk to both of them.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can't make a tree river.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the whole thing of
I can tell you a little story about it.
Tell me a story.
So there's... my teacher, Ipupiara, was teaching the medicine bundle, which is a very sacred bundle, healing bundle, that a shaman creates with his own power that include stones and grains and personal power object, that when he laid on somebody's body, that energy healed the person. That, you know, he brings this person up. So he was teaching this workshop somewhere in the United States. And 2 years later, he came to the same place to teach the same workshop, the same medicine bundle workshop. And one of the participants was so happy to see him because she said, Ipu, I wanted to show you something new, something that I did with, I created a new medicine bundle. He says, okay, show it to me. She says, no, I can't do it. I have to turn the lights off and everybody have to watch to see what happened. So he didn't want to insult her, and he said, okay, let's do that. And she put it in the center of the room. She turned the lights off. And then all of a sudden, from the center of the room, Christmas lights start flickering. Green, blue, yellow, red, all over. Click, 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 click. And everybody was like, whoa. And she turned the light on and she asked Ipupiara, so Ipupiara, what do you think of that? And he says, I don't know. I never seen anything like that. She said, that's right. You know, my client love it. They think it's the greatest medicine bundle. And he said, what can I tell her? She didn't get what it's the whole thing is all about.
Yeah,
she was trying to improve on medicine bundle that is used for thousands of years. Why do you want to put a battery and Christmas light in that? But for her, she took this medicine bundle and she made it contemporary. But it was so not honoring the tradition that she studied with. She wanted to improve on shamanism. And that's the danger of that.
Yes. That's a very powerful story. And I love in that how polite he was.
Well, you know, he realized that there's nothing he can say.
Mm-hmm.
People, that's the danger of teaching shamanism to so many people, that people take it and do with it whatever they want. Even if they took one workshop, they think that they know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the old tradition, each shaman had an apprentice, and that apprentice worked with him for years to learn to respect the tradition and nature and the teachings. We are now teaching people on a large scale, and you just never know what people will do with it. You release whatever you teach people, it's a sacred teaching, but you don't have any control over that. And people can go and do whatever they want with it. That's the price we pay for that. But I think that it's important for people who learn shamanism to understand the thousands of years of experience and respect that went into those teachings, and not try to change them by all kind of different modalities.
No, and or to think that they understand them in one quick, because they've read the book, they know what it means. The meaning is much deeper.
Yes. And it takes years. Mm-hmm. It takes years. There's no shortcuts in shamanism.
No, and apprenticeships are sometimes 40 years, you know, in a traditional community.
Yes. Well, maybe not 40 years, but 40 years is you become very old. But definitely it comes into the 4, 8, 12 years. Yeah.
And I think that there's a little bit of the reverence and respect in some of neo-shamanism, like you were talking about, and that people who are respected elders and who can teach have dedicated and prioritized it their whole lives.
Yeah. Well, you have to remember that neo-shamanism or core shamanism is an attempt to take or to distill the principles of many shamanic communities into one system that can be translated to the Western mind sensibility. And it has no particular indigenous root. Mm-hmm. So the success of it is because of that, because it become, I wouldn't say academic, but similarly to that, because it's not particularly Tuvan, or it's not particularly Tungus, or it's not particular South Americans or Ecuador or Peru. It is the distillation of all those systems in one without the roots. And I think that is, it doesn't help shamanism, because shamanism is the connection of the root to the roots of community, a specific tradition, specific community. So that's the difficult part about that.
It is, and it's a balance, because people's lives are deeply enhanced by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just knowing that because you can do a little piece, you're not a master.
Yeah, and the whole idea of people call themselves shamans are also in that way, that, you know, to be called shaman, first of all, you don't call yourself shaman, you're a shamanic practitioner. The people who call you shaman is the community, or the people you work with, who refer to you in that way. But to call yourself a shaman, I think that it's a little overblown and self-exaggeration. And it is important to be aware of that. That the shaman is a person who is not just do healing work. The shaman is the person who is the keeper of the fire of the community. It's a bigger role than just the person who journey for one person or doing healing for one person. There's a bigger role to it, a bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. Can you say more about that? About how the
Well, if you take a workshop on shamanism, it doesn't make you a shaman. If you take three workshops in a shaman, or the 3-year program, or the 10-year program, that doesn't make you a shaman. It makes you a person who is a shamanic practitioner, that they are able to connect to the spirit world, to bring information, to be a messenger for your client, and maybe do healing work. But the bigger role of the shaman, according to that person in the Tungus tradition, mm-hmm. is to be able to be the protector, the keeper of his community, the storyteller, the keeper of the tradition, the person that helped the community to operate as a community. That is the role of the shaman, keeper of the well-being of a community, of not just of a one person, not just doing one healing. Not necessarily a shamanic healer who is he's a shaman. He knows how to use the shamanic healing tools to do healing, but he needs more than that. He needs to take a bigger responsibility over his community, to be part of a community.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, that he is responsible for the well-being of the community, and the community exists as a being, as a...
Yeah, exactly right.
And he tends the fire in the community.
Yeah.
So do you have a prayer or a song you would like to share with us as we near ending? If that's comfortable, if not, we don't have to go there.
Well, not now. Of course, I do have a chant, and I do have a prayer that I do every morning. You know, in the Kishwa tradition, you do a ceremony every Tuesdays and every Fridays.
Uh-huh.
And you are calling spirit. You have an altar, and you do this your chants, and you're giving the gifts and the prayers to the mountains and to your spirit guides and your teachers and your healers. So that part is part of my ritual, a weekly ritual. But maybe what I wanted to talk, if it's okay,
sure.
It's about the Shamanic Transformations book that I edited. And I collected these stories, these beautiful stories by different shamans about the moment of their awakening. And I think that could be relating to a lot to people who listen to the show, because we all have these moments that we have recognition that the world that we saw before does not hold true anymore, that there's a moment of aha, discovery, the eureka moment, that we feel connected to the larger scope of the universe than who we are, only who we are, and that we feel one and not separated from the universe. And I like the people that listening to go deep into their heart and maybe remember a moment like this in their life that they felt incredibly connected to something larger than themselves. And then take that moment and see if they can make that moment every moment of their life. That they can recognize that every moment, every sunrise, every sunset, every leaf that falls from the tree, every car that goes by is a miracle and a magnificent moment in life. And that's something that the teaching of the indigenous people is, to see the world as a magical place, as a world of mystery, And by that is to live in a place of wonder. When you are living in that place of wonder, the world is not so frightening anymore. The world is actually hospitable to you, and you become part of it. Isn't that beautiful?
It's wonderful. You become so supported, and you trust.
Yes, and there are 48 stories in this book, and each one of them is very unique and different. And it happened to people in many different places, not necessarily just in churches or in synagogue. It could happen on the top of the mountain, in the kitchen, on a walk. When you realize that the lenses that you look at the world changed, that you seeing the world in a different way. Such a beautiful teachings.
It is very, very beautiful. And the book is fascinating. It's one of those books that you're torn between the desire to rush through it and the desire to savor every page.
Yes, because there's so much. It's written in such a personal way by each of these people. And it's so interesting to see, to read people like Sandra Ingerman and Alberto Violdo and Don Oscar Miró Queseda and Luis Miguel Madrone and Lynn Andrews and many more, to hear their personal stories, not just their teachings, mm-hmm. not just their wisdom, but their personal encounters and what shaped them to be who they are now. We all started from the same, you know, skeptic, non-connected people, and see where it takes us. That's the beauty of that book. It's an inspiration for many people.
It is. It's a very beautiful book. And it doesn't shirk the struggles.
Yeah.
Or the surprise or the resistance or any of that, which...
Yeah. Well, it, you know, the shamanic discovery is not something that comes easy. You know, sometimes it comes in many different ways. Sometimes it comes through sickness or through death experience or near-death experience. It's not necessarily all come with a glass of champagne in your hand. It's a journey. It's a spiritual journey, and it's sometimes painful. But when you come out of it, you discover a whole new way of looking at life, which is, to me, is a more real way of looking at it.
Yes. And I think the journey is important. The details, the traumas are not, they're a part of the story, but they're not the definition. The definition is that ability to live fully.
Yes. Yes. I mean, the journey, I mean, even those people have a transformation moment, the journey continues, and it's not guaranteed that they all will be always awakened. It's a moment by moment reminder to keep that awakening and the consciousness to lead you. It's an ongoing journey, and the journey is important, like you said. Very much so.
Yes. Well, we have been talking with Isaac Berry about his wonderful books. The one we were just speaking of is Shamanic Transformations, True Stories of Moments of Awakening. Please read it. It will change your life. Thank you so much for talking to me, Isaac. I appreciate it greatly.
Thank you very much, Nika. It was a pleasure to talk to you and to share it with your listeners.
Thank you.